The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. And so Manchester City are the Premier League champions. Liverpool had 83 seconds of real hope before Pep's men scored four to retain the trophy. And see off Brighton, who are now Chris Hughton-less. Will City win it every year for the rest of time? Will anyone ever be so good in coming second again? And how did Manchester United manage to make the final day a little bit about them during a meaningless game at home to relegated Cardiff? We'll review the Premier League as a whole, take you through the playoffs, update you on Germany, where the title race is still alive, and take your questions on today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jonathan Wilson, how are you?
Quite tired, Max, how are you?
Okay, good to start the pod on such a high. Why, no sleep?
Yeah, just things on my mind.
In the red zone?
Yeah. I got up at 25 past four, did a bit of work, played a bit of computer games because I had nothing else to do, which is odd, but yeah.
What game are you playing at?
Crusader Kings 2, big fan. Saw two Viking invasions this morning. Have some of that.
Barry Glendenning, when did you last play a computer game?
In Australia last year when I was staying with my mate Jake, who has an arcade game in his apartment, which is every arcade game ever made.
Wow.
So I played a lot of Bubble Bobble and Super Bomber Jack.
It's important when you're in Australia to be indoors.
Yeah.
Time. Simon Burnton, been a while.
It has.
The melodic, non-tea drinking tones of Simon Burnton. How are you? I mean, presumably excited about the FA Cup final as a Watford fan.
Well, I don't know. I guess I am excited, but I am doing quite a good job of restraining myself.
Okay.
I think that's important.
But you want to time your...
time my excitement for approximately the 88th minute at Wembley, if at that point it looks like I should be excited. Until then, it's locked in the box.
So City can win the treble then, or arguably is the quadruple, because Pep going for the Community Shield as a real thing?
Well, he did say that in any other country it's, you know, sort of the Super Cup and it's considered a proper trophy, but that doesn't seem to be the vibe here, although Jose Mourinho famously included it among his, you know, when he was holding up the three fingers.
Yeah, you're right. They won 4-1 at Brighton. Liverpool 2-0 win over Wolves. Liverpool were winning the league for 21 minutes after Sadio Mane put them in front, and then Glenn Murray scored at the Amex. They had hope, and the footage of the fans, the Liverpool fans getting very excited was fun, wasn't it? Did anyone think for a moment that they could do it?
Well, yeah, for 83 seconds I did. You know, I mean, City going behind hadn't happened since the end of January in a league game. So you did start to think, maybe something odd could happen. Guardiola's team selection was, or not the selection, but the formation he played was pretty odd to start with. Playing Sterling through the middle, playing sort of 4-4-1-1. Presumably he'd seen something in that FA Cup semi-final to make him think that Brighton could hold out against them. But, I mean, once Aguero had equalised, it was only going one way.
I was only totally convinced it was only going one way when Mahrez scored the third for City. And, you know, up until then, there was a chance, you know. There was a very small chance, but a chance nonetheless.
14 straight wins for Manchester City. They won 18 of their 19 home games, 32 games in total, equaling the record they set last season. They were just 2 points off the points record they set last season, a goal difference of plus 72. They had 15 goal scorers in their squad. Barney in today's paper, Simon, is talking about Guardiola, and even though they've spent a lot of money, he is still brilliant at getting the most out of brilliant footballers, and there are other brilliant footballers in the Premier League who managers don't seem to be able to get the best out of.
Well, you can't argue against that. Players improve under his management. The only question is, you know, there comes the ambition of every team and every manager has to make themselves as good as they can be. But there comes a point where you've just got to say, that's a little bit too much. You know, you've just, this isn't really on anymore. You've got to stop. You've got to rein this in. You've got to pedal back. And this is, I mean, the level of their achievement in the league this year and last year, the combination of the 2 years, it's just not on. It's just not on.
Do you think that's why Guardiola's been wearing that knitted hooded cardigan thing.
I think that's to
try and handicap himself.
I think it's an exceptional knitted hooded cardigan thing. I think that's one of the sartorially. I think that's right up there with. He's not just a good manager tactically. Yeah, he's got the wardrobe as well.
I mean, okay, explain to me. I mean, I accept that when it comes to my knowledge of fashion is only slightly higher than my knowledge of music. But explain to me you'd have. Yeah, I'll give you
that high. I think when he wears clothes, right?
Okay,
it's a step up.
What's wrong with this? Check
there's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying you actually have clothes on. You know how to put clothes on. I think if we played you a musical instrument, if you couldn't see it, you wouldn't know what it was. And that's the level of musical knowledge.
Yeah, possible.
Make your point.
Well, I'm incredibly unfashionable. I see a lot of people, increasing numbers of people walking around Guardian Towers, young people, I hasten to add, with really short trousers and no socks and brogues. It seems to be fashionable.
Mm.
I just don't get it.
No. But that's what happens when you get older, right?
I suppose.
We should probably focus a bit more on...
Yeah.
Well, you make your point about the cardigan, then we'll get back to actual football.
Well, I'm now worried that our generation's stolen all the socks. Are young people not able to afford socks because they're spending so much on lattes and avocados?
Or the bottom half of the trouser.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
What was the point you were trying to make?
The cardigan. Why would you wear something woolen and knitted with a hood? Like, a hood is to keep the rain off. Knitted wool is going to get wet.
Yeah, but hoodies generally are not rainproof, are they? Producer Jonathan calls it a coatigan. Is that what it actually is?
I think I've seen it described as a mandigan.
What's a mandigan? Well,
a coatigan sounds like Gundogan's cousin.
I was going to say Ikar Kotigan. Look, Pep said it was the toughest title he's ever won, and he's right on that, isn't he? Because Liverpool have been so brilliant this season.
Well, yeah, they won it by a point. You know, it couldn't have been any tighter unless goal difference. City were constantly under pressure. They showed signs now and then of almost buckling under that pressure, but ultimately they didn't. And I think Liverpool will... There seems to be this argument, you know, a lot of people are saying Liverpool bottle it, you know, because they could have gone 10 points clear. At one point, they were 7 points clear. I don't think that's fair. I'm not sure they could have done a huge amount better, but I think there will be certain key moments they will look back on and go, made a mess of that. You know, I'm specifically thinking of the game against Manchester United at Old Trafford, where... You know, United lost 3 players before half-time. Rashford was on the field, but clearly injured and immobile. And Liverpool didn't go for that. And
it turns out you really can beat Manchester United, right?
Yeah. And then there was the game they lost against City, the only game they lost, where I think Liverpool perhaps should have settled for a point in that game, and it would have done them.
They were unlucky in that game. I mean, that 11, that replay of the 11 millimetres has been played so many times.
Yeah.
And that clearance from John Stones is utterly ridiculous. I mean, how it happens is bizarre, but for him to stretch that leg and get that ball when he did is a phenomenal moment. And there was the moment in that game where Kompany took out Salah and probably should have got sent off. I mean,
yeah.
But then there's the Everton game. And there's the Tottenham game.
Sure.
The swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
It is not just a cliche.
True. Is the greatest moment Vincent Kompany's strike against Leicester? For Manchester City this year?
Yeah, I mean, that was the moment when you thought, they've done it. I think it was in the balance up until then. Once Saka was in, you sort of think, well, you know, they were, what, half an hour from not winning that game. I think they were always likely to beat Brighton. So, yeah, that was the moment when I think fans would have, at least an extent, begun to relax and think, yeah, it's ours now.
Hmm. And I suppose Riyad Mahrez scored that crucial goal, and he'll be happy because he did miss that penalty. That's another moment, isn't it? It's 0-0 against Liverpool very late on. He ballooned that penalty over the bar. Danny Taylor wrote a piece in The Observer about the fact that if Liverpool didn't stop City yesterday, well, who will and when? And as you say, Simon, it's not on. I mean, this could go on for a long time, right?
It may take Guardiola's departure. He doesn't seem to be a guy who makes significant missteps. The squad is, you know, still incredible, and they'll strengthen it further. So it may be a question of the rest of the league biding its time. I mean, they can try, like as Liverpool have, but this won't last forever. So give a, you know, sit around, watch them play their magnificent football for another year or two, and then wait for the next era.
Ex-pros say retaining the title is virtually impossible. It's so much more difficult. And I suppose as someone who isn't a professional footballer, you think, well, surely you just go and you got, that's your job, right? So, but the mentality to retain it.
I suppose it's a motivational thing. If you've already won it, you're not as enthused, maybe. You know, most people may not be as enthused about winning it again. Others just want more and more titles. But it's a question of keeping the players motivated, which Pep seems to be able to do. It's a question of keeping fringe players happy if they're not getting as many minutes as they think they should be, and he seems to be able to do that. It's a question of having a big, big squad full of quality, which he has, and limitless resources. But, yeah, he doesn't seem to have a problem motivating most players.
There's a question of belief as well, that you know, obviously hasn't held Liverpool back this year, but the fact that they, that the last three teams to have been top of the Premier League at Christmas and not win the league have all been Liverpool. You know, you don't know that you can win the league until you've won it. And Manchester City have, and they've done it again. You know, there's mentally, there's nothing to hold them back.
And I think if I was one of those City players, I think my mentality, I wouldn't have been that fussed about winning league number two once I had one medal in my pocket. I definitely want number three.
And yeah, I mean, how often have we won FSF Podcast of the Year? Just year after year, coming back, going back to the well, and that liquid of desire is still there at the bottom.
For me, that's not. It's not about winning that. It's about not losing it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a pressure there. I mean, especially for you, given the...
Well, absolutely, yeah.
What if I'm a man... It's like being Celtic manager, right? You don't want to be the one who messes it up.
I should bow out now, shouldn't I? Chris Hughton got sacked this morning, surprisingly, before the pod was recorded. John Bruin mentioned that this might... I think it was John who said it on the pod a few weeks ago.
He
might get the boot. And when he said it, I thought, well, that seems really harsh. And it's still... seems harsh to me. Graham Potter, odds on favourite to replace him. Am I right in thinking that's harsh, or is that just...
I don't think so. I wasn't a bit surprised. I mean...
What's the difference, though, between being harsh and being surprised? I'm not surprised at all, because everything I'd heard in the last couple of months was that this was very likely to happen. Brighton have spent a net £65 million this season, which for them is a lot of money, and yet they've got 4 points fewer than they did last season. You can think Hughton's a nice bloke. You can think he's done a great job to get Brighton up and keep them up. But if you're Tony Bloom, the owner, you're looking at that investment and saying, what have I got out of that? There's also, I think there's been some tension between Bloom and Hughton, that Bloom is very much stats-driven in how he sees the game, his signings will be very much informed by analysis. Hughton likes his good bunch of lads, and that has provoked tension. So I'm surprised people are surprised by it. It's a bit harsh, but that's the modern world, isn't it?
What made me feel a bit sad was the way that Brighton said farewell to Bruno yesterday, that a player who's contributed a great deal to the club is, you know, treasured and popular, is... You know, he gets a farewell that his contribution deserves, and then Hughton is quietly ushered out the back door the following day. I think it's I think a lot of Brighton fans will understand this decision. You know, it will disappoint a lot of them, but I don't think there are many that hold Hughton in anything but the highest regard.
So, do you think they should have announced it last week, done a deal so he could have a walk around the pitch? I mean,
I think that would have given the fans an opportunity. There aren't many managers who leave clubs in the Premier League on good terms. You know, generally, you leave a failure, and he hasn't done that. And the opportunity was there for him to have a moment yesterday, and for the players, for the fans to have an opportunity to thank him for what he's done for them, and for him to, you know, soak up that positivity. And I feel a bit sad that he was denied that.
They haven't won a game since their 2-1 win at Palace over 2 months ago. 3 points in their last 9 games. So,
and they went 7 games recently without scoring a goal. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, Tony Bloom made his millions or billions by some accounts. You know, he's a very shrewd gambler. He's a brilliant poker player. He's set up this sports or sort of sports betting company. He doesn't make knee-jerk decisions. He'll have thought this through mm-hmm. very carefully. But, yeah, I agree with Simon. It would have been maybe a nice touch.
I doubt Chris Hughton. I
mean, he doesn't leave with his reputation damaged, you know. So, yeah, give him his moment in the spotlight. And he will get another job, yeah. No question about that.
The judgment really will be passed in the future on this decision. It is not inexplicable. The question is, have they already planned for the future? If there's a plan in place to improve them from here, then it makes sense.
You mentioned Bruno. I mean, to still be playing in the Premier League at 38 is ridiculous anywhere. But at fullback, which is a position where you have to sprint a lot, is
not
remarkable.
Not as much at Brighton as many clubs, in fairness.
Say again?
Not as much at Brighton as many clubs.
That is a fair point. As for the Liverpool game, 2 goals for Sadio Mane.
Sorry, just one more back to Brighton quickly. If they do get Potter in, he's done an absolutely terrific job at Swansea with 1.5 arms tied behind his back. So I think that would be a huge step up.
Well, I'm off on Thursday and Ellis is in, so you know what that podcast is going to be about, don't you? The Liverpool game, 2 goals for Sadio Mane means he's a joint Golden Boot winner with Salah and Aubameyang. 21st clean sheet for the Golden Glove for Alisson. The Wolves fans had fun at Anfield, spuriously celebrating Brighton goals, singing Raheem Sterling is top of the league. Some Liverpool fans were very upset about this.
Were they?
I think so. I mean, I suspect not all of them. The ones that I saw on social media, which is not necessarily the barometer of things. It's hard to say what do Liverpool need to do in the summer to get closer to sitting. I mean, they're pretty damn close, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the huge worry, I guess, for them. That, yeah, if you've got 97 points, you're the third highest points tally in history. It's still not enough. I guess you do look at that run of 4 draws and 6 games and think, well, we just got to make sure we win one of them. But you equally think back to the 5 winners after the 80th minute, and they have dragged results from nowhere. So
they benefited from the largesse of several opposition goalkeepers in, you know, late doors.
I mean, I don't think it's possible to get more than 90, for Liverpool to get more than 97.
They've got the best defence in the league. They've got 2 of the 3 joint top goal scorers. They've got 97 points. You know, they have had an incredible title-winning season.
Yeah,
in which someone else has gone and won the title.
David Norris says, everyone's saying it's incredible Liverpool got 97 and didn't win the league. Where were you when Dorking Wanderers got 105 points in the Isthmian League Division 1 South in 2016-17 and came second to Tooting and Mitcham? Who got 105 points as well. 105 points in 46 games is extraordinary. And they came second on goal difference.
In 46 games?
In 46 games, yeah.
Right.
Oh, man, it's extraordinary.
Sunderland got 105 points in winning the championship in 98-9, which I think Reading have since taken that record, so it's doable.
David says, was it disrespectful for Liverpool to refuse to give Wolves a guard of honour for winning the Everton Cup? interesting to see what Wolves do in the summer, isn't it, how much investment they need to get, because they've had a great season to come seventh and Man United have had a terrible season to come sixth. And I suppose you've made this point before, Barry, that the points they've lost against bad teams.
Yeah, I mean, less points against teams at the bottom six than teams in the top six, which suggests it's a problem that's easily enough figured out. There is money there for players. I could see them definitely overtaking Man United next season.
Right, the only possible thing that could have happened yesterday, apart from what happened with the title, was if Spurs had lost to Everton and Arsenal beaten Burnley, there was an 8-goal swing, then Arsenal would have gotten the Champions League. There wasn't. Spurs drew 2-2 with Everton, finishing above Arsenal for the third season running. Only their second draw of the season. The other was against Arsenal, where Lloris made that crucial penalty save. Everton fans were much more interested in Liverpool not winning the league, really, singing Blue Moon, and then singing songs about how Tottenham are going to win the Champions League and how good that's going to be. And Andre Gomez apparently looking, when he came on, looking like he wanted to impress Pochettino, because there's a rumour that Gomez is going to Spurs in the summer from Barcelona rather than Everton.
I've read that he's already agreed personal terms. It wasn't a particularly reliable source, but
20 days now before the Champions League final. So the question is just, is who will be fit for Tottenham? And that's quite a big, I mean, for Liverpool and Spurs, it's a long time.
It's a huge gap, 3 weeks, yeah. I think gaps have happened before. I mean, there's definitely stories about Liverpool before winning the European Cup. Going to Mallorca for a week or something, and Forest as well. And Clough's Forest, Clough banned them from doing any training, and John McGovern would sneak out of the hotel to do the 6 mile run he did every morning, and hope that Clough didn't catch him, because the idea was to have a week of drinking to relax and bond. I suspect that won't be happening now, but
unlikely.
Presumably, there's a good chance Harry Kane will be fit. I mean, he looked fit enough celebrating on Wednesday night, didn't he? So,
would you pick him, Jonathan?
I mean, you'd have to judge how fit he is.
Well, assuming he's fully fit, would you pick him?
If he's fully fit, you do, yeah, I think. I mean, it was Diego Costa who tried to play a Champions League final against Real Madrid, didn't he?
It lasted 5 minutes.
Yeah, so you don't want that, obviously.
No, I'm just more curious if you assuming he is fully fit, would you pick him for this final, considering how well Spurs have done in his absence?
Well, they haven't really, apart from in certain previous Champions League games. Yeah, they played very well during his last injury absence, but their league form has been pretty dismal recently. So yeah, I think you get him back in.
I guess the question is whether can you fit more him and Son in, right? Is that the question?
Well, so the question ordinarily would be whether, even if he was physically fit, whether he's match fit. But this 3 week gap means that no one's going to be match fit, so that's fine.
And there are stories that both Liverpool and Spurs will play games, right? These sort of behind closed doors matches, which is, I guess, quite a sensible idea. I just never really considered that as a thing, that you'd play a proper... Do you think they'll mock it up perfectly with, like, the Champions League, the big...
The music.
The music and that big tarpaulin of a football in the middle and all that. Recreate it.
I think it was some French team yesterday. Was it Lyon qualified for the Champions League, and their players afterwards in the dressing room celebrated by standing in line for the Champions League music, which was played over the stereo. That's quite great. A nice touch.
Arsenal did win. They won at Burnley 3-1. Eddie Nketiah with his first Premier League goal. A couple for Aubameyang, including a lovely volley and an amazing miss from 2 yards. But Arsenal dropped 14 points in the 6 games before yesterday and ended up just a point behind Spurs. That's got to be tough, hasn't it, Simon?
They've been really poor. I've seen them a couple of times in that run. They were very, very, very bad. So, yeah, they could easily have got the Champions League had they been a bit less awful, but they've missed out for being awful. It's not like Liverpool, who missed out on their ambition despite being awesome. They don't deserve any more than they've got.
Petr Cech says, thank you, Premier League. 2 teams, 15 years, 443 appearances, 202 clean sheets, 280 wins, and 4 cup emojis. It's been a privilege and a pleasure. Hashtag goodbye. Would anybody like to say goodbye to Petr Cech? He's been a good servant. Feel like it's the right time for him to stop?
Yeah, maybe even a year too late. But no, he's been... At his peak, he was brilliant. So, yeah.
And he's a top fella.
He is.
And a good drummer.
And I saw him eating a Scotch egg once.
Really? So,
yeah. A mini one.
We've discussed this before. Was it a mini Scotch egg, or does he just have very big hands?
But it's quite an English or British specific food, isn't it? A Scotch egg.
I think it was a quail's egg. Oh. Or it was a small egg. I don't know. I mean, I
you calling me a snob?
Well, I didn't eat it.
Hanging around quail's egg restaurants.
It was on a buffet. So, they are a quick word on Burnley. Their form in the second half season was really good, wasn't it? What that's pain
lovely
in your
goal.
Face, Barry.
Quick word on Burnley. Why?
It's just a sort of season review, isn't it? Okay. We don't have to. We can crack on.
I don't really have anything to say.
Well, they were terrible and then they were all right.
A lovely goal from Ashley Barnes yesterday. I like that type of leaning back. Guided header.
Yeah, okay. Well, there is
12 goals this season he got, which is the most by any Burnley player in a single Premier League campaign.
Thank you for being more amenable on the quick word for Burnley than Barry was.
Sorry, Burnley.
Look, Arsenal are in the Europa League after that win in Valencia and hat-trick for Aubameyang. And we'll talk about that in part two after we've discussed very briefly Leicester 0, Chelsea 0. welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. A quick thank you to everyone who came to the live show in Hackney on Friday. It was lots of fun and I had a nice time. You had a nice time, Barry?
I did.
Yeah, Jonathan?
Great. Yeah, very nice. Thanks.
Great, great.
I was at home.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. That's okay. Would you have come?
If I'd been invited.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
You could have had a free ticket, I think.
Yeah, easy.
Yeah.
You could have done a little cameo.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, next time.
Another time.
Okay, marvellous. So, look, Chelsea finished third. Eden Hazard said he's made his decision. He's informed Chelsea last week. Quote, it's not just about me, he says. It's quite a lot about him, I would argue, on his decision. Where's he going to be? Wilson, Real Madrid?
Surely, yeah. I mean, if his decision is to stay at Chelsea, this is an extraordinary way to announce it.
Well, Anton Griezmann made a video, didn't he, to announce that he was staying at Atletico Madrid.
Chelsea fans cling on to the fact that Hazard's his own man, so therefore he might just stay because...
Well, he is his own man, and there's no question he likes living in London. And, you know, he feels his family's very settled here. So, but I think that's just an explanation for why he hasn't already left, rather than...
Well, he might stay.
I mean, it's, you know, given the...
Could go to Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, given the transfer ban, I see very little chance of Chelsea improving significantly enough next season to mount a title challenge. So it's about, you know, he's of an age where if he's going to leave, now's the time to do it, right?
So they drew 0-0 at Leicester. Leicester said goodbye to Danny Simpson and Shinji Okazaki. I love Okazaki. He's been a great part of the Premier League recently. When Leicester won the league, he's got tremendous quads and thighs.
He's a good player, yeah. And has been a faithful servant for Leicester. Please stop asking me to have a quick word about things I've really.
I'm amazed you discuss. You point out his quads and thighs.
Yeah.
I've mentioned on the pod before, his calves are incredible.
Oh, yes. I mean, I was working down to them. I just hadn't got there yet. They're not quite at Shaqiri levels, but they are. They're the second best. Eric says, now that he's finished third in the Premier League and got to the Champions League and is in the Europa League final, how long before Sarri is sacked at Chelsea? Simon?
Not yet.
Okay.
It's quite odd. Chelsea fans appear to have very little regard for him. But he has, on the face of it, done quite well. You know, they're in a European Cup final. They've qualified for next season's Champions League. But I'm not sure quite what else he could have done in one season.
I saw someone say something quite interesting about Chelsea fans, you know, desperate for him to start Hudson-Odoi, and he never would, to the point where Hudson-Odoi, if he did anything good, like just a side foot pass to a teammate, Stamford Bridge would erupt. And if... You know, Jorginho tried a 70-yard pass that didn't quite come off. Chelsea fans would get really angry. But look, they're going every week, right? I mean, they're a. I don't know if it's an expectation.
May leave. I mean, he's been quite non-committal about his future there. I would imagine he's not particularly happy about having this transfer ban inflicted upon him, because, you know, as we know, he has strict ideas about who he wants, and if the ban is enforced, he won't be able to get them, and there's interest in him initially, so he may leave.
The Europa League final, so they got through on penalties against Eintracht Frankfurt. They'll play Arsenal, who saw Valencia pretty easily. The final is in Baku. Lots been talked about this. 6,000 tickets each. May the 29th at the Olympic Stadium, which has a capacity of 68,700. The UEFA statement is quite long, but it's extraordinary. It says, based on UEFA's recent experience with Europa League finals and the Super Cup in comparable venues, the number of finalists supporters requesting tickets can vary greatly from club to club. Of course, it is impossible to predict in advance which clubs will reach the final, while the venue has to be chosen around 2 years in advance. Taking into consideration the above, and most importantly the geographical location and logistical capacity of airports in and around the host city, it was deemed that around 15,000 spectators would be able to travel from abroad, with Baku as the main hub. So unless two teams...
with less than 7,500 fans each.
Yeah.
I mean, tell me the club that's been in a Europa League final that would take less than 7,500. Yeah, I mean, Dnipro are probably the smallest club to have got there in recent years, and they took more than 7,500 to Warsaw. And I know Dnipro, you know, Dnipropetrovsk to Warsaw's not that long a journey, but still.
It does show a total lack of understanding of football, of football fandom, like the decision about the host of the 2022 World Cup, there is very little logical explanation for this decision having been made in the first place. The cost of tickets, let alone the cost of getting to the stadium to use them, is, you know, bizarre. It's just an organisation, it's an organisation that doesn't mind being held in contempt. It is basically a contemptible decision, and they've taken it in full knowledge that the impact will be fury.
And there's nothing we can do, right? I mean, that's the point. We can complain about it, but what feasibly could you do?
Well, I mean, this is, I guess, more on the Mkhitaryan point that because he's Armenian, there is a security risk there. And I don't know how you can guarantee his safety, but if you have a situation where a player feels unable to play in any game because of the safety situation, that cannot be held as a venue. You know, that cannot be a venue for the game. So I guess what you could do, and it won't happen, but what you could do would be for Arsenal and Chelsea to turn around and go, "We're just not doing it." If Mkhitaryan can't play, if our fans can't travel, you can't really do it with the fans not travelling because they've already signed up to be in the competition and everything. But with Mkhitaryan, you can say, "Look, if he's not safe, we're not going to play it."
That probably wouldn't go down, you know.
What are UEFA going to do? Like, seriously,
UEFA could sanction Arsenal then, couldn't they?
Well, Arsenal and Chelsea. But if, you know, you then get the European Clubs Association to back you.
They can't get to back you.
Henrik says, it seems like the general opinion has gone from Premier League clubs needing a winter break to compete in Europe to the Premier League makes teams so strong and fast that no one can cope with their power. What has changed, or has everyone been wrong?
Well, I never thought the winter break was a good idea anyway. I mean,
but people said it was a deal breaker as to why English clubs weren't doing well in Europe.
Some people said that, and I think there is a certain level of truth that the attritional quality of the Premier League meant that English teams were more fatigued in big games. I think that possibly is true. But, I mean, fundamentally, the last 10 years, the underperformance of English clubs in European competition has been, you know, has been profound. There's been a problem there. I think it goes way beyond being slightly tired. I think there's been a collective failure. But, you know, we're now seeing the benefits of having a tough league that... I think for 3 or 4 years, Premier League clubs have looked bigger, stronger, quicker than Spanish, Italian, German teams.
Here's a question from Sam. Following the 2-0 defeat to Cardiff, what's the best way to deal with my summer-long existential crisis as a Manchester United fan? Manchester United 0, Cardiff City 2. Barry, what advice would you give to Sam?
I'd look forward to more of the same next season, really. I think Manchester United's problems are going to get a lot worse before they get better. I said earlier, I fully expect Wolves to overtake them, and I think there's a very good chance they could fall quite far down the table next season.
They finished 34...
They're an absolute shambles.
I
watched... They've won 2 games in this recent run against West Ham and Watford. I watched both of those games, and they were... abysmal in both of them. And they're extraordinarily lucky to finish with as many points as they got.
So they've won 2 of the last 12, haven't they?
Right. And were dismal in both of those 2.
I think they scored 4 goals in the last 8 games, 2 of them penalties. Is that right?
I don't have those stats. All I know is they finished 34 points behind City, 32 points ahead of Cardiff, who are relegated. So closer to 17th than first. Solskjaer won his first 8 games, was unbeaten in 11, then lost 8 of his last 12. As meaningless as this game was, does anyone think this might have a bearing on his future? Or
I don't think it was meaningless. That's every game for him is important.
Okay.
And the last game of the season at home at the end of a run like that, losing against a team that's already relegated and losing badly, it's embarrassing. It's a humiliation for Manchester United. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has aged about 20 years physically since he took that job, since the PSG game. I mean, it's quite obvious looking at him. The man is under a lot of stress. And he needs a hell of a lot of help from the Manchester United hierarchy. And I'm not so sure he's going to get it. And I'd say they already regret giving him the job. We can question the wisdom of giving it to them when they did. If you like, benefit of hindsight, it's easy to say they made a mistake. But if they hadn't, if they'd left him in caretaker charge, who's to say their good run wouldn't have continued? But I would imagine they're going into a summer now where they need a complete squad overhaul that's going to cost a hell of a lot of money. And the responsibility of recruitment is at the moment on the shoulders of a manager who has no experience of doing anything like this ever before. It's a huge gamble to take. And it could, chances are, going on the evidence of how they've performed since Alex Ferguson left, you'd be fairly confident that any gamble they take will backfire.
Do you think there's any... The way Pochettino's been talking about what happens if Tottenham win the Champions League, could you see a situation where he leaves and says, I'm having a year off or something, and then he's just sitting there waiting for this job?
Pochettino, I think, is really interesting what he's... The way he suddenly kind of started talking like that in the last week or so. I mean, I presume that's just sort of an internal game at Tottenham to force Levy to give him some transfer funds. But it does suddenly offer United a way out of the farcical situation they've got themselves into.
Mm. Richard Jolly says Nathaniel Mendes-Lang has scored more goals at Old Trafford this season than Alexis Sanchez.
Richard Jolly comes up with some cracking stuff.
Yeah, he does. A soft penalty and a tap-in where Pogba just didn't track his man. I know there were those scenes afterwards where Pogba was sort of chatting to fans who were shouting at him, which seemed slightly unseemly, but that's what happened.
It's quite an unedifying spectacle, a grown man, middle-aged, shouting abuse at a footballer, but I suppose he's obviously angry, he pays his money. I personally am of the opinion that paying to go to a football match entitles you to watch a football match, not scream abuse at whoever's on the field, but other people have different opinions, and I can understand their frustration. It's not all Paul Pogba's fault, but you know, he's a handy target.
Not picking up from the throw-in is pathetic.
That second goal was just
Sunday League. It was Sunday League, that
inexplicable.
I completely agree. I would have shouted at someone for not trying, and I don't really shout at anyone. Mason Greenwood, by all accounts, according to my Manchester United sources, an amazing prospect. Youngest player to start a Premier League game for Manchester United. So there's the hope. Producer Jonathan writes, and I think quite correctly, a bit run not to include Ander Herrera in the final game. He'd done a video, you know, Manchester United put out a video saying how much he loved Manchester United.
Yeah, he loves them so much he'd do anything for them except play for them.
Well, I mean, I don't know whose decision that was, if that was...
Well, it's classic Edward Woodward's out, you know, forging new noodle partnerships and petrol partnerships, prophylactic partnerships, while back at the training ground, all these players are sitting around and their contracts are running down. So, yeah, I don't blame Ander Herrera for leaving. There's talk maybe that... I was being a little facetious there. There's talk he felt underappreciated because they weren't showing much interest in offering him a new deal and I think Paris Saint-Germain. But, you know, I couldn't blame anyone for wanting to leave Manchester United at the moment because... Yeah, you don't really want to be associated with that.
The one thing, it's not a really a consolation at the moment for United fans, but maybe in 40 years so it will be, that the most interesting period at a big club is when things are going wrong. So the most, for me, the most interesting period in Manchester United's history is that sort of 10 years post Busby, and I suspect in 30 years I'm still knocking out the books, I'll be doing one about this period in United's history. So that's something to look forward to.
That's some solace for the United fans, isn't it? Monty says, if Woodward was in charge of Manchester United in the year 1992, would he have sold Beckham, Scholes, Giggs, Butt and the Nevilles to various lower league clubs in order to pay Toto Scilacci $450,000 a week to be shite for a season? And Rich says, I've just noticed that Simon is a wine blogger. What bottle would he take to see Sir Alex?
Oh, I mean, there are so many. What I'm enjoying at the moment, I would burrow down way too obscure, but
just give us one.
Well,
something to go with the quail Scotch eggs, maybe.
Something to go with Scotch eggs. So I've recently got some Julien Pilon wines. He makes mainly white wines in the Northern Rhone. Really good, not very expensive.
How much a bottle? Just out of interest,
maybe 13, 14 pounds.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying them right now.
Okay. I mean, that's top end for me, anything over 10. I try to go anything between 8 and 10. That's my...
You've got to, if you're going below 8, then you're not going to drink nice wine.
Okay.
If you're interested in putting pleasant things in your mouth, you need to go above 8 these
days.
Okay.
Oh, good to know.
But at 8, you can drink well.
Okay, good. Crystal Palace 5, Bournemouth 3. This is how an end of season game should be played, Barry, isn't it? Quick word on Palace, quick word on Bournemouth. I'll do it then.
No, it
oh, the classic cough excuse to get out of talking.
Rollicking good way to close the season. Julian Speroni's last game for Palace, absolute club legend. He wasn't in the squad either. I was a bit curious to know why. But apparently he'd asked not to be. He didn't want any special treatment. I still think he should have got special treatment. They should have given him, let him play.
After this season, though, Wayne Hennessy needed to play somewhere, didn't he?
Wayne Hennessy didn't play yesterday.
No, he must have been on the bench.
Yeah, he was. And it may all... I think Jason Puncheon, I'm not sure if he was there to say goodbye, but is he still on loan at Huddersfield, or was that prematurely ended? I'm not sure.
Don't know.
Yeah, so Puncheon's leaving the club anyway, another club legend. And it may well have been Wilf Zaha's final game for Palace. And if it was, he signed off in quite impressive fashion because he had a hand in all 5 goals they scored.
He did. And the fifth was like Bournemouth were trying to recreate Cameroon versus Claudio Caniggia, weren't they? Everyone flying in at Zaha at hip height, and he managed to get through them and set up Andros Townsend.
Given his reputation for going down at the very slightest contact, and that was an extraordinary refutation. And I think he does dive occasionally, but he should just keep that video. Like, they should play it on the big screens at Sellers Park when he goes down the box and people are accusing him of diving. Because he did extraordinarily well there.
Lerma's an underrated shithouse, isn't he?
Lerma, is it? I mean, Lerma has really shithoused Kingman's son, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he did it again with Zaha. It was Zaha. But
that was
score.
What provoked Zaha's run, wasn't it? Zaha was wound up.
But he did score an absolute belt. I mean, it wasn't quite Yeboah bouncing down and in, but it was pretty glorious. And there was a nice own goal from Jack Simpson. Producer Jonathan has given us some funny, you know, absurd results from the last game of the season. Last season, Spurs 5, Leicester 4. Season before, Hull 1, Spurs 7. Season before that, Newcastle 5, Spurs 1. Before that, Stoke 6, Liverpool 1. And 2 years before that was the West Brom 5, Man United 5. The last time Lukaku was good, I think. Is that harsh on Lukaku?
Yeah, he was brilliant for Belgium against Brazil in the World Cup.
I'd take it all back. I was just proving that I remembered something that happened in that game, to be honest. Watford 1, West Ham 4. West Ham winning the battle for 10th place. Huge. Noble with a lovely goal, the first one, probably the pick of them. And we should pick out Delafeo's touch to round the keeper. That was genius, I thought. But the big news from this is the red card for Jose Holobas, right? It means he might miss the FA Cup final unless the appeal is overturned. You were there, Simon?
Yeah.
You can keep on your Watford coloured spectacles if you want.
I'm mad as hell about this red card, I have to say. I think that, you know, I think it's unlikely to be overturned because there was contact between the players, in that Holly Bass gently rested a few fingers on his opponent's shoulder. But he didn't need to go down. And once he did, I mean, a red card is extraordinarily harsh for that offence. Given some of the other things that happened yesterday that got no punishment at all, that Pogba on the touchline at Old Trafford, the two assaults on Zaha, if he goes down to either of those, it's a yellow card. And if he doesn't, it's nothing. Like, what? There was no need for the guy to go down. And once he did...
But there's no need for Hollabaugh. Hollabaugh knows this game means nothing. He's got the cup final, right?
He touched him. And so I expect the inevitable appeal will fail. But for that challenge, such as it was, to have such an impact on the player, to make him miss a cup final, he's not going to play in another, Watford's first cup final for 35 years, is extraordinarily, illogically and unjustifiably harsh. And there's also... a historical coincidence in that when Watford last reached the FA Cup final in 1984, their left back then missed the game because of an extraordinarily harsh red card that happened a few matches before the final. On that occasion, it was Wilf Rostrin, who was also the club captain. He was sent off in a derby against Luton. The referee apologised for doing it later, but there was no appeals process at that time. So Watford were without their left-back because of a stupid, illogical and unnecessary red card 35 years ago when they were last in an FA Cup final. It's going to happen again. And I've got cuttings here from Graham Taylor saying, we've got to change the system so that if someone does a minor thing in a league game in the run-up to an FA Cup final, it doesn't destroy the club's, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime event. And... it still happens. It makes no sense. You know, it's a different competition. And I guess what a decision like this, the impact of a decision like this has, is that, you know, Watford played a full first team against West Ham in their final game of the season. You can't be doing that. If you qualify for a cup final and the cup final is important to the club, more important than the remaining league matches, you can't be playing your first team.
Didn't Watford rest players against City earlier in the season as well? I thought Watford... you know, have rested players at times.
There have been a couple of games this season, mainly away at United and away at City, where there were lots of changes made. Mm. I'm not sure if it was resting or tactical.
I mean, I agree with Simon. I don't think I think he should play in the cup final. Maybe that's just sentiment on my part.
Okay. But I think there's three slightly separate issues here. One is that individual competition should be discreet. So if a suspension incurred in one competition should not carry over into a different competition. I think that's... yeah. Every club who's reached a cup final has a story similar to this. You know, Sunderland had it with Sean Elliott in the 1985 League Cup final. I think that might even have been yellow cards rather than sending off. But, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Secondly, should that be... I mean, I slightly disagree with you. I think Antonio was slightly off balance and that conduct probably was enough to knock him down. So don't really blame Antonio for it.
I don't think it was. I think he could have stayed on his feet. But anyway, carry on.
Could have done, but why would he?
No, fair.
I don't think it's a massive dive. That's because I think he was tight of bonds. But anyway, that's not really the sort of wider point. The wider point is, if I just, you know, we've sorted out red cards in the box for professional fouls, that it has to be something really cynical to merit the red card. I'm not sure why that's not the case outside the box as well. I think if two players are running together and the forwards... he runs in front of a defender and the defender catches him and there's nothing he can do. Yeah, it's a foul. He's probably a yellow card, but can you send somebody off for that?
Would you be better off giving a penalty? if it's stopping a goal-scoring opportunity outside the box, could you still give a penalty but keep the players on the pitch? Or is
maybe
that ridiculous?
No, I mean, that's how it... you know, in hockey, a deliberate foul in the 25 is a short corner. So, yeah, it works there. I mean, you compare that incident to Ward-Prowse... against, was it against Newcastle?
When he was miles
out.
He
got
out.
A yellow card because he's inside his own half, but he's deliberately stepped across the line of
Almiron.
Your Ward Prowse is a far greater offence than Hollabaugh's. So there's an imbalance there that I think maybe we should look at.
Well, you'd also like to think the referee knows the situation. You'd like to think he'd have said to the Watford players before, "Look, do not give me a reason to send you off." But if that's the best reason they could come up with, if I was Mr. Kavanagh, I'd be feeling a little bit of a git today.
But then someone would say, "Oh, you need consistency," and his assessor will say, "You should have sent him off." Blah blah blah.
But you can't not send somebody off because they got a cup final coming up. Well, you can't do that.
No. But I don't think it was a red card offence.
Well, that's also arguable, because arguably the touch was taken away from goal anyway. So,
anyway, we will find out what happens. But I think I'd be surprised if it's overturned. Fulham 0, Newcastle 4. Jonjo Shelvey scored a banger, didn't he? Will Rafa be there next season, Barry? Quick word on Newcastle.
I'm going to say no. I suspect he might get a better offer.
Anyone want to counter that?
Well, the tone of Rafa's interview afterwards suggested that he was more content in his own mind. But, you know, I don't think negotiating with Mike Ashley's an easy thing. And, yeah, it's just a farce. It's got to within, you know, what date is it today? May the 13th. So he's 18 days from the end of his contract. It's a nonsense.
Southampton 1, Huddersfield 1. The most disappointing news of this was that Huddersfield Town gave every travelling fan one of those hideous, unnecessary away kits. So they all wore them.
Amazing they haven't sold out of those. Shocking.
Nathan Redmond scored a cracker, didn't he? Ralph Hasenhüttl says, Redmond's potential is limitless. Can we think of anything that Nathan Redmond is unable
to
do?
I'm confidently predict that Nathan Redmond will never set foot on the moon.
Okay.
I don't think he'll win the Premier League with Southampton.
Okay, Simon?
I think he's got the potential to set foot on the moon. Honestly, the lad can do whatever.
Because he has feet.
That's his mind to.
It'd be great to see Nathan Redmond in a giant space suit.
A little beard just poking out underneath.
Exactly. Playing the guitar as he floats around. Anyway, goal of the season on Match of the Day in the UK, they went for Vincent Kompany over Andros Townsend, which is arguably the biggest disgrace of the season. Anyone?
Well, they've judged that slightly on context rather than the purity of a strike, haven't they?
Mm. And it's wrong.
I think it's the goal of the season.
Kompany's?
Yeah. I think, judging it partly on context, I think it's a fabulous goal. The flight of the ball, mm-hmm. when seen from behind the kicker, was beautiful.
No, it wasn't as beautiful as Townsend's.
The identity of the goal scorer and the match position and the league position at that time makes it basically, it's impossible to present a counter-argument.
Are you trying to bring sentiment into every area of football so that Jose Holabas plays in the FA Cup final?
Well, I think that if you take sentiment out of football, there's nothing there. You know, it's just totally some people agree. Running around a pitch kicking a ball. Like everything happens in context. That's what, you know, the league is basically an artificial construct for adding context to what would otherwise be meaningless football matches. Everything that happens in the Premier League is what it is only because of the context.
I'm with you. In the playoffs, Derby 0, Leeds 1. Lovely goal by Kemar Roofe. Superb cross from Jack Harrison. Leeds with a better side. But at the big moment, Craig Pawson gave Derby a penalty when Harrison appeared to take down Jaden Bogle. Took his right foot from under him as he was shaping to shoot. The assistant, Eddie Smart, made the ref overturn the decision. I thought that was a penalty.
I thought that was a corner. I just didn't know it was a foul either way.
I still haven't decided.
Oh, yes, but Barry on the wireless yesterday was, if we put him in the VAR room, they'd still be there. And now on Monday, they'd still be there.
Well, I haven't spent the 24 hours in the interim constantly monitoring it.
Not like the third umpire. Just rock and roll it. Just rock and roll it again. Villa 2, West Brom 1. West Brom took the lead when Glenn Whelan accidentally turned into a 70-year-old man. And Dwight Gale nipped in to score. Jack Grealish set up Conor Hourihan for a great finish. Grealish would then take it down in the box. Not a lot of contact, but it was a foul to me. Tamar Abraham scored the penalty. And then Dwight Gale was sent off. First yellow was for time wasting. Second, going in on the keeper. Seemed unfortunate the second, but he was on a yellow.
Time wasting after 50 minutes.
True.
He was... That was a big flashing red card above his head all game. He was in one of those moods where you can see a player's going to get sent off.
Mm. Gale is like that. I've seen him do that before for Palace.
But Hal Robson-Kanu's already suspended for the whole of the playoffs.
So Jay Rodriguez comes in?
He was playing anyway, Rodriguez. Oh, okay. So they just play with 10.
I mean, I guess maybe orders have come down on high to Gale from Newcastle. I mean, yeah, I meant Mike Ashley, yeah, not God. Yeah.
Can I get Rondon back now?
Well, probably not, but if West Brom go up, Rondon costs more. So Gale did what he could to stop you know, try and halt West Brom's promotion chance.
Well, it rules him out of the second semi and the final because it's his second red of the season, so he gets an extra game ban. In League One, it could be a repeat of Sunderland Charlton 98, the Mendonca Mickey Gray final.
Brilliant.
Charlton.
I don't think it will be.
You know, well, Charlton won 2-1 at Doncaster. Charlton were two up early.
The Charlton bit's not the bit I'm doubting.
No, I know that. Doncaster did get one back. I mean, Charlton were all over them at the start, but Donny's Matty Blair scrambled one late on to keep it alive. Sunderland won Portsmouth 0. Lovely volley from Chris Maguire. You don't think that'll be enough?
No, I thought Sunderland were... I mean, certainly the first 20, 30 minutes, Sunderland were pretty poor. I think Portsmouth physically can overwhelm Sunderland.
Why were there only 26,600 there?
I'd have to say it slightly surprised me, but then talking to my mate who go regularly, very few of them went. And their reasoning, and I think it makes sense, is that they don't have a huge amount of money. That if Sunderland win, they've got to fund the trip to Wembley again, which, you know, to come down from Sunderland to London, have a weekend, is you're probably talking 250 quid. And yeah, so if Sunderland win, they've got that expenditure to come. If Sunderland lose, they're not particularly bothered being there anyway.
John,
and I think there's been a lot of disillusionment about Sunderland have played over the last month. You know, they have been pretty poor the last month.
John,
they
says,
were poor on. Sorry,
I'm trying to read John's question.
They were poor on Saturday as well. But
John says, would Barry allow himself only one beer a week and one cigarette a day for 3 years? If it meant Sunderland getting promoted from League One, winning the Championship, then winning the Premier League and the Champions League?
No.
To win the Champions League? Go away.
I don't care that enough about them. I'm not heavily invested.
Two beers a week.
I don't smoke, and I would smoke a cigarette a week.
In League Two, Newport are through to the final. They beat Mansfield on penalties. Quite a fun game. The Mansfield keeper is a big old unit, isn't he? I don't know a lot about him, but he's...
I watched this game. It was really, really good. I have no idea how it ended scoreless. But
lots of chances for both sides, weren't there?
Yeah, it was quite entertaining. It's probably the best game I saw yesterday. I saw like about 4.5 games. I think that was the best one.
Conrad Logan is the Mansfield keeper. 33. I mean, I thought he was about 48. 48, many apologies. I share a birthday with him. That's nice, isn't it? Thank you, Wikipedia, for that. Tranmere are 1-0 up on Forest Green going into the second leg, which is tonight. Into League Two, Ray Armfield writes, Salford City, the heartwarming story of four promotions in five seasons with a striker on more than £4,000 a week and the unlimited backing of a Singaporean billionaire and six bored multimillionaires. Salford beat AFC Fylde 3-0. I understand the antipathy from other lower league fans about Salford and how much publicity they get because David Beckham occasionally watches their games and Gary Neville watches a few more. But if they all invested in Cambridge United, I wouldn't care at all. I'd be perfectly happy.
I think the problem with Salford is they're one of, and they're the most extreme of many clubs in the National League that are, you know, they're nearly all full-time professional clubs now. And there used to be a gulf in class between the fourth division and what was then the conference. And that isn't really there anymore. But there's only one automatic promotion place from the conference.
That's true.
It should be three up, three down.
Yeah, but the League Two, football league clubs are not going to...
Oh, of course they're not. They? No.
But you're absolutely right. It's a right bugger to get out of.
There are a lot of very professionally run clubs with lots of financial backing in the conference. Salford just happened to be the most high profile because of the, you know, extreme amounts of money they have been hosed at them and because of their owners. But I find it a little bit grubby, but it's not something I feel particularly strongly about.
But what's the amount of money that isn't grubby?
Well, exactly. I don't know. Where do you draw the line?
But this is what financial fair play is sort of meant to do, isn't it? It's meant to make clubs self-sustaining, or at least up to a point self-sustaining. So I guess the question is, what happens to Salford when those millionaire, billionaire owners turn off the tap? Mm. Are they able to sustain themselves? Will their fan base have grown sufficiently to do that? Or are they another Gretna who when their owner, what was he called, Brooks Myerson, something like that. Mm. When he died and suddenly Gretna, boom, they're gone. That's the when you start to think it's not quite right, if there's something artificial about it.
You say that you would welcome it happening at your club, but I think the question is, if people take over a new club and say our vision for this club is to totally transform it, is for it to be unrecognisably different in a few years' time, who would welcome that?
No, I mean, changing the shirt would trouble me, you know.
Is that it?
I mean things like that, things that are the staple of your club, right? We play in amber and black. Right. That's what we do. Yeah. And if somebody came in with a billion and said it's going to be blue, I'm trying to work out if I go a billion. And I suppose you're right, but then it doesn't. Then what is the but point? Is it your club? Because right, you know, like, they move it down the road.
Manchester City is not in. Apart from its name, it has almost zero in common with the Manchester City of 20 years ago.
Guardiola himself has said that. Guardiola has said that he came in and you know, is a clean slate for him to start building on, because as far as he's concerned, there is no history before.
Yeah, so I find that distasteful. And if I was really emotionally invested in a small club and some billionaire came in and everything was completely transformed over the space of 6 months, new ground, new training ground, all these new players, I wouldn't like that.
I know what you mean, but I don't know where the line is.
I'm not that interested in success.
No, but I understand, and the romance needs to remain. I just don't know where the line is. I obviously want somebody to come in who loves the club. I want somebody who happens to have a lot of money, and I'd like us to buy some better players and be better than third worst in the Football League, right, or fourth worst. But
I guess it's up to the individual to draw their line.
Mm.
But if you go to watch a club because of a combination of factors, a feeling of belonging, geographical convenience, a kind of sense of kinship with other people who are there, and at some point everything about that is different, do you recognise at some point? Do your eyes open and you go, well, this is not, you know, this is fun in different ways, but this is not the team that I support.
And say, for example, on TalkSport or the BBC or wherever, you get these, you know, interview ex-pros. We do it all the time. Yesterday with Michael Brown on, used to play for Man City. Now, with the greatest respect to Brownie, the Man City he played for, did he really play for the Man City of now? See also, I don't know, Jason Cundy, Chelsea. Whereas if you've got a Liverpool player, you can kind of see how, well, the Liverpool they played for is still in some way related to the Liverpool of today, I think. Or am I talking absolute cobble?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a strange case. I mean, there's only really Liverpool. I mean, maybe you could include Everton and Villa in this. Of teams who were genuinely really, really good in the 1890s, who are still really, really good today. I mean, yeah, Villa, not so last 3 or 4 years, but it's pretty unusual to be able to sustain success for 120 years, 130s. I mean, yeah, I was sort of thinking,
how old do you think Michael Brown is?
I think he's 147. No, I was just trying to think, you know, if I guess the club you grew up supporting is what you want it to sort of be like all the time. But that would just mean, for me, it means something sort of pootling about in the lower end of the second flight, which is an ambition we may be able to achieve, and getting ripped apart by Ricky Otto every season.
But I just do wonder if, Barry, you're sort of, you know, the PR, whatever, of Liverpool has somehow managed to be, it's just been less blatant.
Maybe.
They've still got buckets of money buying players. It's I suppose they're in the same ground, right? So it seems they're still at Anfield, right? So that is a thing that was there in your youth. And City aren't. If City was still at Main Road, maybe we'd feel, even with all this money. It's an interesting conversation, I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation, but it's one that's just sort of sprung up out of nowhere. So I haven't really had time to think properly about it.
Well, we'll think properly about it and we'll talk about it.
I do. Yeah. City fans, I know quite a lot of City fans, of Manchester City fans, and they have absolutely no trouble at all supporting this team.
Yeah.
And, you know, I watched Manchester City came to Vicarage Road this season, and fans are singing We Are City. And I'm watching a team of extraterrestrials playing football at a mind-blowing level. Like, this is even, I don't know, this City team have no relation to anything.
And like, City, you know, I think of Niall Quinn, Paul Dickoff getting that last-minute winner against Gillingham. City getting crowds of 30,000 in the third division. That's the City, you know, the clown car.
Maybe it's weird just getting old, you know, things change. Barry, tiny bit of fit bar?
Yeah. It's a weird one this weekend, actually, because there was the Old Firm derby on Sunday lunchtime. Rangers absolutely swatted Celtic aside, beat them 2-0. Scoreline doesn't do their dominance justice. And a lot of Celtic fans are very, very upset about it because they were accused of, or they're accusing their players of the heinous crime of not trying. But it was an inconsequential game insofar as an Old Firm derby in Glasgow can be inconsequential. And Celtic are on the cusp of securing their third consecutive treble. They have to take on Hearts in the Scottish Cup final. If they can beat them, that's three trebles in a row. But there's also talk of them slightly being in crisis because they've got all this dead wood that Brendan Rodgers accumulated at the training ground that they need to get rid of. I was reading the Daily Record today, some writer, he listed 11 players and said, here's a Celtic 11 who would strike terror into the hearts of absolutely no one except the accounts department. So they have to be got rid of. There are various loan players who will be going back to their parent clubs. Dedrick Boateng is about to leave on a free. And they need to get new players in. And the question is Neil Lennon the man to take charge of this overhaul, or do they give the job to someone else? So that's the talk there. In the game itself, there was a bit of controversy when John Flanagan of Rangers appeared to floor Scott Brown with a forearm smash, and Neil Lennon was very upset that he didn't get sent off. Afterwards, Bruni sort of didn't make... He was asked about it and didn't really want to talk about it. He just was more concerned about Celtic's poor performance. And, there was some atrocious sectarian abuse of Celtic players and Celtic Football Club as well by the Rangers fans. People say it's a small minority. It quite clearly isn't. It was clearly audible on television. And elsewhere, Dundee have already been relegated. So the other relegation spots between Hamilton and St Mirren, they play next week. Hamilton need a point. So it looks like St Mirren are going down.
Thanks, Barry. And that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll round up Europe. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start in Germany, live with Archie Rintutt. Archie, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks, Max.
Excellent news. So the title race goes down to the final day for the first time in 10 years. What happened?
Well, this weekend we had Bayern away at third-placed RB Leipzig, and you had Dortmund at home to Dusseldorf. So the big controversy that came out of the Leipzig-Bayern game was a VAR decision, which was decided by the toe of Robert Lewandowski, called offside, called the joke of the year by Bayern president Uli Hoeneß, despite the fact that Thomas Müller agreed that it was a correct offside call, which it, by technicality, was. Bayern not very happy, but they draw 0-0 with Leipzig. So that meant that Dortmund had to win against Dusseldorf, which they just about did. Marvin Hitz came in to replace the injured Roman Bürki in goal, but he made something of a howler following in Roman Bürki's footsteps at Werder Bremen last week. But Dortmund just managing to squeak over the line, even though they were 3-1 up, or they went 3-1 up in second half stoppage time. They still managed to nearly draw 3-3 because Dusseldorf pulled one back. And then with the last kick of the game, Dusseldorf fullback or Dusseldorf defender Andy Hoffmann slid the ball just wide. But without Jadon Sancho, who was on the bench, Dortmund just managing to squeak it to the final day, meaning that, as you say, first time it's decided on the final day here in 10 years. And it's that little bit more interesting in terms of narrative, because Dortmund are away at Gladbach, meaning that Lucien Favre, the man who basically built Borussia Mönchengladbach in their modern form, goes back there and could win his first league title since he did it with Zurich back in Switzerland. But Bayern only really need a point, because they're 2 points ahead of Dortmund with a goal difference which is superior by 17 goals. But Niko Kovac, the Bayern coach who left Eintracht Frankfurt last year, could be stopped by Eintracht Frankfurt on the final day. Frankfurt are vying for a Champions League spot, and they lost 2-0 at home to Mainz on Sunday, which is something of a hangover from the Chelsea game. So, very exciting. But I think that this is just about going to be squeaked home by Bayern next weekend.
Interesting that it's Lewandowski's. I imagine he's got quite big feet, hasn't he? If he had smaller feet, would the title race be over now?
Yes.
Okay. So Emil Heskey has very small feet for like a tall person, I seem to remember. A sort of size 8 or 9, whereas Lewandowski, I imagine, is in sort
this
of
is,
clown shoes.
This is not the first time that he's been caught in a very marginal offside decision this season either. Away at Leverkusen when Bayern lost 3-1, Bayern had a goal ruled out when they were 1-0 up. So, of course, Bayern feel that they would have gone on to wrap that game up. And actually, Lewandowski, who is 4 goals clear of Paco Alcacer in the top scorer charts, if you look at his expected goals and some of the chances that he's missed, he's not actually had all that good a season in front of goal. He's added a lot more in terms of what he brings in terms of his build-up play. But he probably wouldn't make my team of the season necessarily, just because he's been below his own expectations, I think, even if he reacted a little bit aggressively to Didi Hamann in the press when he was called out on that around February before the Liverpool game. But yeah, Lewandowski on 22 goals, and then behind him we've got Paco Alcacer on 18 and Luka Jovic on 17.
I'm not messing with Didi Hamann because he says he doesn't like any fiction, but he does like The Jungle Book. Oh no, the Lion King. Which I had to explain to him was not a documentary. Anyway, only 2 positions in the table sorted ahead of the final day, 3rd and 16th. So what else have we got to look forward to on Saturday?
The race for the Champions League, Max. You have Gladbach in 4th on 55 points. You've got Leverkusen also on the same amount of points, but 2 behind them in terms of goal difference. Frankfurt, who have fallen away a little bit in the last few games. They got smashed 6-1 by Leverkusen last weekend, remember. But they're a point further back from them and obviously have that very tough trip to Bayern. And then you've got Wolfsburg, who are just 2 points further back from them in 7th. So you've still got the entire top half vying for a European spot, because you've got Werder Bremen and Hoffenheim are in 9th and 8th, respectively, just behind Wolfsburg. So that's very exciting. Then there is some mid-table mediocrity to be decided as well. But you had Hannover and Nuremberg, who are relegated back to the second division this weekend. What was Stuttgart winning? Stuttgart are guaranteed to be in the relegation playoff this season, which takes us nicely on to the second division.
Yeah.
Where Hamburg are guaranteed not to go up unless there is a 20-goal swing on the final day, because they lost 4-1 away at Paderborn. Real crisis again at Hamburg. Hannes Wolf, who took Stuttgart up not too long ago, without a win in 8 games, expected to be sacked after the final game of the season away at Duisburg, which means that joining Cologne in the Bundesliga next season will be either Paderborn, who 2 seasons ago were relegated to the 4th tier, but got a reprieve because a club didn't get their license, meaning that they stayed up by default, got promoted the next season, and this, their first season back in the 2nd tier, they looked like they could go up. And Union Berlin, who are quite a story in themselves as well. So a club in Berlin, who very much fight against the odds in terms of their budget a lot of the time, but are playing a great season. They went the whole of the first half of the season unbeaten. They are behind Paderborn in the table, hoping for a slip up away at Dresden, whilst Union go to Bochum on the final day.
Archie, thanks for your time.
No worries. Cheers, Max.
Thank you very much. Archie Rintat, live from Germany to Spain now. Diego Godin said a tearful goodbye at the Wanda Metropolitano as his 10-year stay at Atletico came to an end. They drew 1-1 with Sevilla, a blow for the latter's Champions League places. Ahead of them in fourth and fifth are Valencia and Getafe. Valencia beat Alaves. Getafe lost to Barcelona to set up a nervy final day. Pretty extraordinary comeback from Valencia. Just 6 wins in their first 25 games in the league. 4 defeats, 15 draws. They were 15th in December. They're now above Getafe on head-to-head record. Their first appearance in the top 4 all season. At the bottom, a dramatic defeat for Girona against Levante leaves them needing a miracle to survive. They were ahead on the hour. Christian Stuani with his 19th of the season. Levante equalised. Then Girona were awarded a penalty. Levante had a defender sent off. This got overturned by VAR. A free kick was awarded to Levante, who went on to win it. Girona need to overturn a 3-point and 6-goal deficit in order to finish above Celta Vigo. To Italy now, and here is Paolo Bandini.
The biggest talking point of this week was probably the launch of Juventus' new home kit. Gone are those iconic black and white stripes, and in their place comes a half and half number, still black and white, but with a thin pink strip down the middle in a notional nod tradition, since Juventus did actually wear that colour before they ever got some fresh ideas from Notts County a little over a century ago. Anyway, everybody in Italy hates it, with the possible exception of those fans of other clubs who are just delighting in seeing Juventus fans upset about something. But of course, the real idea here is to create a look that will sell well internationally. Juventus already got a good year's worth of shirt sales with Ronaldo's name on using the classic look. So I guess here's something different. And on that front, we'll have to wait and see if they get what they're looking for. In any case, an inauspicious start wearing the shirts as Juventus lost 2-0 to Roma. They were actually better than Roma in the first half, despite really having nothing left to play for, of course, this point of the season. And it took a good couple of saves from Antonio Mirante to keep things level at half time. Ronaldo, who has been going for the golden boot and is not going to get it, barring something pretty remarkable in the last two games now, then got into an argument with Roma's Alessandro Florenzi in the second half, mocking him for being short, making some hand gestures, saying he was too short to have an opinion, as they were rowing over the Portuguese player not kicking the ball out for an injury. Florenzi then goes on to score the opening goal for Roma, who win 2-0. So he who laughs last laughs loudest and all that. Roma remain locked in a very, very tight battle for the last two Champions League places. Milan and Atalanta both also won this weekend, which is going to make things very tough for the Giallorossi. But it also heaps a whole load of pressure on Inter as they prepare to host Chievo on Monday night. Now, Chievo have already been relegated, but they have also beaten Lazio since they were relegated, so you never know. And also, a peculiar situation developing there, because Inter have been linked now very, very strongly to Antonio Conte, and the theory is that Conte will take the job as long as Inter get the Champions League. Well, doesn't that create some interesting incentives for Luciano Spalletti, currently the manager? But anyway, big game for them, as I say, on Monday night. Atalanta are ahead of them now, up to third, and if they can take 4 points from their last two games, they are guaranteed to finish in the top 4, which would be extraordinary. But the next of those games is away to Juventus, and before that, they have a Coppa Italia final against Lazio on Wednesday night. So lots coming up this week, and a lot to be defined in the Champions League race.
Thank you very much, Paolo. In France, devastating news for everyone. Guingamp are relegated. They could only draw at Rennes, meaning now they're now 7 points off 18th with 2 games left. All over. Devastating. Monaco back in trouble. Ahead of Caen in the relegation playoff by goal difference only. Just 2 points above Dijon in the automatic relegation place. They took 15 points in Jardim's first 7 games back in charge. They've picked up just 3 more in the 7 games since. They've got 2 games to preserve their top flight status. Marseille held up one of the best banners of the season as they lost 3-0 to Lyon. It said, "You have neither the shoulders nor the balls to wear our shirt. Get lost." If we had one of them at the live show, would it affect our performance? Someone had a banner saying, "Wilson."
Why are we talking about fashion all the time?
It's not about fashion. It's a banner that they
Sounds like it's about fashion, doesn't it? You don't have the shoulders to wear that shirt.
I mean, if you want to take it down that...
I just feel very vulnerable after the 20-minute assault on Friday on my tweed jacket.
Well, I'd like to apologise.
I'm not blaming you. I'm blaming official Big Dave.
Yes, in the audience. was not happy with it. A bit more from title races around Europe. Ajax picked themselves up from their Champions League disappointment to beat Utrecht 4-1. PSV, winners of the Eredivisie last season, lost 1-0 at AZ. So Ajax 3 points ahead and have a goal difference, 14 better goal difference. So it would take some really ridiculous results on the final day to prevent the trophy heading to Amsterdam. Robin van Persie played his final match. Got a nice guard of honour. A 2-0 defeat for Feyenoord at home to Adio Den Haag. He left the pitch in the 93rd minute. They have one more game left, but he won't be taking part. And he posed for a lovely picture with this mashup of all the shirts he's played in his career, which it looks like he's got a sort of superhero...
utility belt.
Yeah.
I find it quite tedious, these players making, you know, having these... protracted me goodbyes. I mean, it's not as quite as, he wanted to go out at home, so he's basically refusing to play in the final game of the season.
It's the Fenerbahce superhero utility belt. The best ever was Schneider, wasn't it? Not his fault, but having to sit on a sofa and they put a TV in the middle of the pitch and showed him his greatest moments for Holland.
And a pot plant. It was the pot plant. Really
it was a pot plant. Absolutely marvellous.
Well, John Terry's and Steven Gerrard's are pretty hard to beat as well.
Do you think we should have had one for Jimbo when he retired?
Well, he retired so suddenly. It wasn't like well, he didn't retire. He effed off so suddenly.
Oh, is he still working? I hadn't noticed.
Now, there's room for everybody.
I might have been symbolic, but I accidentally broke my Football Weekly mug on Thursday night with Jimbo's face on it. It's quite a sad moment.
Yeah. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Did you go? Have you taken it to a repairer's to glue it together?
No, it's in the bin, but I couldn't bring myself to throw the piece with Jimbo's face in it in the bin. So
is
I still
there a
have
Football
that.
Weekly mug with your face, Max?
That is, you know. I'm not really into merch of... I don't know if it's my decision. No, is the answer. There has been no merch.
Oh, noted.
Yeah. When will we get merch, Barry?
I don't know.
How many years in?
There'll be a lot of image rights issues for me anyway. I don't know about you.
That is true.
And plaster my mug across their mug.
I wouldn't be
without me getting a cut.
Yeah, I wouldn't be the face of anything, apart from when I was the face of McCoy's for a year. On a significantly lower contract than I imagine Lineker got for Walker's crisps. Spent one day in Fratton Park in winter. It was absolutely freezing. But they did have the hero crisp and like a sort of young researcher or a runner in a Tupperware box. Clearly had spent the night opening packets of McCoy's to get the biggest, best, roundest McCoy. And then they would hand it to me and I would put it in what had been like an ironed, corrugated metal packet of McCoy, so it looked really perfect. And I'd put the crisp, pick it up, put it into my mouth, but I wouldn't be allowed to bite it. I'd have to go, and then I'd have to give it back to this teenager and put it back in the Tupperware box for the next take. Secrets. Why am I holding a piece of dental floss? I don't know. Anyway, and finally, Grasshopper Zurich. This is from Alex Stone. Bizarrest end to the season. Zurich relegated for the first time in 70 years, 4-0 down in Lucerne. The fans moved pitch side and threatened to storm it, demanded the players handed over their shirts and socks. They wanted them to crawl back to the changing room like dogs, just in their pants. Game abandoned.
I mean, it's astonishing Grasshoppers have been relegated because they are giants of Swiss football. But
as Barry says, you're entitled to go if you buy tickets to watch the game, not to make your team strip off.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. I'm just sort of intrigued that if you've got players on the hands and knees, why do you want them to be dogs rather than actual grasshoppers? Surely they should have...
What, rubbed their legs together and made
and then sprung absolutely miles.
Yeah, that would seem to me more appropriate and fitting than barking a bit and pissing against a tree.
True. I mean, it's hard to enforce any of these things, but quite hard to enforce.
I'm not sure any of them should be enforced.
No.
But were they to be enforced,
right,
that would appear...
And what, if somebody doesn't do the whole thing jumping, they have to go back to the start?
Yeah. And, you know, when Sunderland lose at Tratton Park on Thursday, their players should pretend to be black cats and should rub themselves seductively against the corner flag. Meow.
And used... and then, the upright as a scratching post.
Yes, or, and then run out into the road and be knocked over by a passing truck.
Are you asking Lee Cattermole to come up to you and before sitting on your lap spend a lot of time with his hands just prodding your legs to find a comfortable position?
Lee Black Cattermole.
Producer Jonathan writes, please end in big letters. So we will. Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Simon.
Yeah.
Thank pleasure. You, Jonathan Wilson.
Cheers, thank you.
I'm away on Thursday. Ellis James will be in the hot seat. No doubt there will be plenty of discussion on Graham Potter and a lot more. So be nice to him. Great.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.